I'm all aware that one of our colleagues lost a family member, so I think it's appropriate for the committee to let him as well as appear to formally pass our condolences. We did do so by way of a card and a wreath. Yes. Some of us were at the funeral, I was informed. So it's important that we record our condolences to Mr. Felix and maybe others who we were not aware of who lost loved ones since we last met. The agenda for today that members have received, my one, which have indicated that from 9 to 11.30 we just want to have a discussion around the budget alignment, and then from 11.30 to 1 we were going to get some update on the unrest that have taken place at Crimson City Urban Support Mall. I've been asked if that can be put on hold because the department is currently still finalizing, so that won't happen. We do see the department next week and thereafter, so it's something that we will certainly ask the department to inform us when they're ready, to give us a briefing on that matter sooner rather than later, Commissioner and COO, but that won't be there, so we're not hoping to have a long meeting today. And that will be put on hold. Tomorrow is committee business. And next week we will deal with the admin, property, finances of the department quarterly, and I think the week thereafter would be the operation. So that's the next 2 weeks. Just some context for today's meeting, and I'm sure members will remember that towards the end of last year we thought it was important that we sit like this and look at the department's budget, especially because we, in our interaction with stakeholders and with the department and our budget debates, we always ask the question, is the department's finances that we approve every year appropriately deployed? Every year we ask that question. We thought, let's look at it and see how do we improve it. I say that because, you know, when one goes to the white paper, Commissioner, and I was reading this morning that you yourself, in the foreword, I think, indicated that when you first joined the department, that was the first thing you acquainted yourself with, and like, the principal strategy document. And this document was approved by the Cabinet in 2004. And really gives BCS's activities away from incarceration or warehousing to that of rehabilitation. That's what that document talks about. And the successful reintegration to society. It has 10 strategic points, I think. Breaking the cycle of crime, security risk management, implementation of sentences imposed by the court, conducive environment for rehabilitation, community support for offenders, reconciliation of the offender with the community, productivity of offenders, health of healthy family relations, and discipline correction of facility. It is underpinned, this principal strategy or vision is underpinned, amongst others, by our commitment to human dignity, equality, humane treatment of offenders, security of offenders, children's rights, rights to education, and freedom of religion. So those are some of the things that are in the white paper. I'm trying to summarize what is in the white paper, because this is what should inform our oversight in the first instance, and should be what informs the department's draft plan and budget. The Act, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, just to remind us that is the other piece of direction that we have talks about in section 3 the establishment functions and control of the department. It says the department must fulfill the purpose of the correctional system in terms of this act. The department must, as far as practical, be self-efficient and operate according to business principles, and the department must perform all work necessary for the for its effective management. So that is what the department must do. It then talks on all other things. The question then is our budget talking to those points that I've raised and many others? Finally, just to remind the committee and the department that historically security enjoyed about 34% of the budget, admin enjoyed about 26% of the budget, care 11%, correction 9%, facility 12%, and development about 3%. So it was that type of a breakdown historically. As we look at care, correction, development, that is about 23% of the budget, less than the security, which is 34, less than the admin. So the question that we're asking, or we should be discussing, is this appropriate, and if not, how do we begin to move to a position closer to the budget? That's really what we were discussing. That's really what the meeting is about. And us and them, hoping that the department also has thought about this. Members can also contribute towards it. It's really a think tank brainstorming session, so that we are able to influence the policy direction. The AG is here, you can assist us, and you're free to discuss AG. Everybody else is really, because there are no decisions taken, it's a think tank, everybody can discuss. We're hoping that the political authority was here, because they also, I think, are an important role player, but they aren't. I'm hoping the department then will be able to share some of the thinking of the rest of us when they do discuss with the political authority. So I want to stop at that point, ladies and gentlemen, and really open it up for discussion. And if there are other points that members want to put on, let's put them on. But really, how do we move from a 34% security, ideally, to a 34% rehabilitation? Bearing in mind that we've got an overcrowding crisis that I think also has to be prioritized. Do we build prisons? Do we educate our people? The president, in his State of the Nation address, emphasized education, job creation. How do we fit into that from where we're sitting? And also, Mr. De Vele, I think, at the beginning of this year indicated that education is going to be one of the key areas that he's going to focus on. So how do we do that if we don't put money into what promises are being made or instructions given by the executive authority? He's a valaga there. I'm not sure how you want to take it, but maybe commissioners allow you to give your own thinking if you think we're out of line, and then allow members then to give their own thinking. But I try to summarize where we are over the past 4 years that we've been in this position. Over to you, Commissioner.
Chairperson, the department also want to put on record that it sends sincere condolences to the family of the portfolio committee. Mr. Kyle, we had an opportunity to convey that just prior to the funeral itself. And once again, we want to register our consternation and assure family that we as a department do share the grief that the family has gone through. I want to thank you, Chairperson, on behalf of the department that this morning we have an opportunity to bring some of the issues that you have raised with us here. And of course, beginning the year with a number of issues that you put before us. Secondly, the budget alignment has been an issue that this portfolio committee has raised. And we did internalize that. I don't think, on behalf of the department, that the topic the topic that you've chosen out of hand, but it's an issue that needs to be discussed and perhaps find a common platform and a common understanding. You have rightly quoted the white paper on corrections that the FTC has to set to provide services toward rehabilitation and reintegration of offenders. Bearing in mind that the minister has always said that when a recipient blind department, everybody does what he does, the police, the judiciary, and ours is to create an environment that those who have deviant behavior should be taken care of. But that's not the end of the story, but at the same time, the issues that you raise as to whether there is an alignment and appropriate distribution of the budget in accordance to the core business of the department. You have quoted a number of items here which I would like to refer to. Breaking the cycle of crime, security, sentencing imposed by the courts that we need to adhere to, conducive conditions for rehabilitation, community support, and the rest. But most importantly, you quoted Section 3 of the Act. That is, there are conditions that must be fulfilled by the DCS. And one of those that you mentioned is self-sufficiency in accordance to basic principle, business principles. Now, if one has to juxtapose all these things, the appropriateness of the budget, Chair, I think it is important as we deliberate and discuss this matter to say that the 34% versus the 23%, whether it's the appropriate distribution of the budget, it's a debate that is worth it, but a debate that we might not find a solution now, but find common cause to see where balance is. If I were to use a political position and say corrections is about creating safety and security of the community, but underpinned by rehabilitation and reintegration. Now, you would find that in our budget, compensation of employees, because we are a labor-intensive organization, and the people that you would be mentioning in our discussion, most of them, if not the majority of the officials, are the ones that we have to find the core face of this. So there's duality here, that there is the question of security, which we have to ensure in our facility. And there is rehabilitation, which is taking place through the same officials who are in the cold face of business. Now, the disjuncture, which I think will not have a perfect situation wherein we might invest the need to have a higher component in terms of our distribution of our resources, especially from a budget perspective, that it should turn around into more into rehabilitation and less into security. I think my personal and those of colleagues that we had the opportunity to travel, we have seen in terms of benchmarking that the institutions of our nature, they also concentrate on issues of security. Because if you fail in terms of adhering and providing security and the peace of mind to the society, then you have a problem. Now, as to whether we'll have an equitable balance, I think that's where we need to have discussion, Chair. That we need to be sensitive to the fact that if you recall 2010, we had a mass escape, and that points to the question of security. But not only that, and I don't want us to hide on the premise that we're a nascent democracy, but we also need to take cognizance of the fact that the facilities that we have taken over post-democracy are facilities that were not conducive for what we call rehabilitation, and the 18 years that we have passed together is to create an environment where rehabilitation and reintegration become the core. And allowing also the Freedom Charter says we should not see the prisons being turned into centers of punitive justice. So there is that concept that we need to also integrate in the process. Now, I want to believe that over time, as to what time is, assuring that a very relative matter, will we be able to reach a point which is a tipping point that says we now have a budget that looks into rehabilitation. But I must say the very 23% that you've mentioned, care having 11%, corrections 9, and development as 3, yes. I think we should not be too much worried, but of course raise concerns that can we reach a position where in this budget can increase gradually to a point where in we don't concentrate more on security. But I don't see us really leaving security out of the equation. And I would like to see from a perspective which says, much as we say it's skewed towards security, the bit that is put into the rehabilitation should have tangible outcomes. A case in point that you have mentioned on Section 3 of the Act, that correctional services have self-sufficient and working according to business principles. We have indicated and intimated to yourself that we are putting into place a trading account. Now, some of our facilities have workshops, have farms. So the concept of self-sufficiency is relative, depending as to where we sit, because not all facilities will have those attributes. I can report today that in the last meeting that we had with the National Treasury 2 weeks ago with Mr. His name will come, we were assured that the route that we've taken of establishing a trading account is something that is plausible, uploadable. But there are other issues that they want us to look into, that it should be a phased process, and that will be given to us, which we'll give to the portfolio committee to provide that commitment that indeed self-sufficient and creating an environment where in offender labor in particular is not offender labor in its old form, but it's for rehabilitation and for skills development. Now, I think the discussion is long overdue in terms of us, the portfolio committee and correctional services, to have an incisive discussion as to rehabilitation. Rehabilitation, also as you rightly said here, is community support. We may do as much as we can, but if we do not have support from the community, then we have a problem. But I would like to state here that the minister, with the vision that he has provided and the stewardship that he leads, the establishment of VOD, Victim Offender Dialogue, speaks to this. Because it says it puts the issue of corrections and rehabilitation at the center of what we do. Because most often, I believe for the past 15 or 16 years, and even in the public space, every time there's crime, we speak about criminals, but the families of the victims are less considered. So we need to turn that space by saying we need also to be there to provide support to the victims. I'm saying this guidedly because if we don't do that, because the families of the victims come at the end, and that is why when we look at the current pace with which we have moved in terms of victim offender dialogue, we find resonance in the society, acceptance. But key to this is that as we move into this trajectory, it is important that we create an environment that says offender labor, community participation, victims are considered in the process. Then we'll find that there is a correlation between the organization, portfolio committee, and the society speaking in the same direction. But for the moment, Chairperson, as we tweak and change the organization and restructure, you should have seen that we have a clear distinction for the first time that we have a unit that deals with sentenced offenders, that deals with remand detainees, and that deals specifically 100% with those who are on probation and police. That, for me, is a step change, because in the past, we tended to muddle everything into one lot to a point wherein we don't know what is. Now we can hold people accountable. The 60,000 people who are on community corrections, there's somebody who is responsible, and therefore they need to put measures in place. The same applies to the remand detainees. And that is why the Correctional Matters Amendment Act of 2011 came into being, precisely because of the recognition that it's one component of the offenders or those who have been deemed to be judged by the court that need to be attended. And then, of course, we have the second one. And then, of course, the issue that Chairperson, you have is sentence plans towards rehabilitation. Now we can hold people accountable that CDC is responsible for this. Do you have this in place? What resources do you need? What measures do we put in place? And by so doing, we'll be able to dissect and be able to channel the resources appropriately. And to make things much easier for us from that perspective, I sincerely believe that the leadership that we provide with your team is that looking at this matter is not a diversion, it's a matter of concern, because we want to see as to whether those who are in our care in a incarcerated inhumane condition are taken care of. But one poignant statement before I close, Chair. Is there a need for hospital facilities? Yes. There is a need. We need also to, that money goes into security, that's security. Building prisons, it will budget that deals with the issues of security. Now, the overhauling of our prison facilities will take a long time. Because the previous minister, Mapisa Nakula, did indicate that we need to have appropriate facilities to deal with appropriate challenges that we face. Mothers with babies, the youth or the juvenile, as well as the aged. Now, if we're able to have that, and also have separate facilities for remand detention. Now, I believe that all these things put together, I think that we can achieve in a manner that it speaks to the issues that are confronting us at the moment. But I think we are open for discussion. There's no one size fits all, but I think we'll be enriched and empowered from the discussion that I sincerely appreciate the discussion that but also I must indicate here that the budget that we'll be putting forward this year and in the strategic plan and the APPs is completely different from the APP that you have seen before. We were criticized, we were challenged correctly, so that 122 objectives, 47% achieved. And we admitted in this conference that it was not feasible. But I'm proud to indicate that the team that sits here today, we can present APPs that we can account for. And where we fail, it should be, you know, we should be able to account to one. But certainly we have cast down, because we seem not to know what we're doing, the operational issues, strategic issues. This time, the issues that we put on the table is that there's refinement and an attempt at the highest level possible for realignment of our budget. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks,
Krishna.
I did acknowledge the AG, the speaking judge, but we have our the normal counselors from NICO and CSPR. I am not sure if there are any others, but you are welcome. I think we must open up the discussion. I'm asking members to allow me to debate for 5 minutes. Maybe we should ask those two stakeholders to give us a 5 minute input if they so wish, because they are part of the think tank. When I say those two are talking about NICRO and CSPR, if members so wish. But just to say that the question is about the balance. The question is about the white paper. But what I failed to mention is that this white paper is a 20-year vision. It's not a vision for tomorrow. So maybe we should be saying in the first 5 years, this is what we should achieve. In the next 5 years, sometimes, and I'm guilty of that personally, sometimes you look at the entire white paper and you say, yeah, but you guys are not doing this. In other words, that's picking on the white paper myself. So maybe that's what we should be doing, saying which are the priorities for the first 5 years, which are the priorities for the next 5 years, are we still on track for 20 years, or is this thing just a pipe dream? And also then to get your views. I'm asking NICO and CSPR, because we don't want you standing up tomorrow criticizing the department if you don't have any solutions. It's one thing to say this thing is not aligned. I'm not coming with any solutions. It's not helping anybody. Neither is it helping us. So Vanessa, we'll give you 5 minutes, really just to touch the thing. The question we're asking is the budget appropriate? And you know about it, because we have said to you guys that we're going to have this discussion. So we're really not ambushing you. We're ambushing you in the sense that we're giving you 5 minutes to maybe give us your view. You've heard what the Commissioner has said. We'll open it up to members after you've spoken. AD, if you want to chip in, maybe you should chip in. We really want to make the budget work according to what all of us think is the correct thing. Really, that's what we want at the end of the day. Vanessa, you've got 5 minutes. Is that okay if I allow those members 5 minutes? Vanessa, 5 minutes, and then you'll follow them after that.
Thank you, Chief. I'm sorry, I was a bit late. I got a bit lost. So I didn't fully hear everything the Commissioner said, but I just caught the last bit. And obviously, I'm glad that we are all on the same page when it comes to the vision of where we want to see the DCS going. But I think in terms of the challenges, there's lots of challenges still on the ground for us to get where we need to get. And NICRO's big thing is always the issue to promote alternatives sentences. I heard what the commissioner talked about developing boarding facilities, and yes, we need appropriate facilities for juveniles and women. But that's our priority, is to keep people out of prison who don't have to necessarily go to prison. I think that's always been our campaign, and we're going to even be more stringent on that, or rigorous with respect to that. And restorative justice, yes. I think restorative justice offers a promise for rehabilitation that no other intervention can. And I think, and really, he says about the department's commitment towards that, but I think it needs to be done more often. There's also challenges with regard to that. Some of the challenges we experience is it's very tricky when offenders request dialogues with victims, and we're dealing with many of that right now. I mean, often going to victims, they're not ready to deal with it, and so there's some complications in it. But once again, the commissioner talked about that, you know, the societal responsibility and community participation and work with civil society organizations like ourselves, I would assume, is in that community context. But once again, it's also the whole, and I hate to bring it up, but the funding of NGOs. If, you know, if we offer for that service and in the budget, I don't think we necessarily, the department still doesn't have a policy on financing of NGOs. And it's not just about getting money. I think we have to be committed to the service delivery that needs to happen. We need to be more effectively coordinated in our efforts, and we need to support the vision properly, and we need to fight it for additional services that the state cannot provide in those budgets. I hear what our commissioner talked about, the balance between security and rehabilitation, and that's understandable. And Chairperson, you talked about priorities. I also think, despite the wonderful model that the white paper presents, we know it's a long-term plan. Right now, we have to decide what do we do with the resources we have and how do we work with this the best we can. And I think the solution lies in the correctional official. I believe that investment in training, professionalizing the organization is critical, because I believe on the ground there are correctional officials who make a difference by the mere fact and the way they engage with offenders. That is rehabilitative. And I think we need to pay more attention. There's also other alarming issues of assaults and a whole lot of other things where things are not right with officials. And I really would see that as a priority. Because I really think we can't get to an ideal. We've got to work with what we have, and we've got to realize where does, you know, where do those priorities lie. So, I think there's some practical solutions that we can continue to engage with, working with what we have at the moment. So for now, I'm glad to hear about offender labor thing being picked up again, and I really hope to see us resuscitate some of the agriculture and farming things and the industry that haven't been operative to get that going, because I really think productive work is critical also for rehabilitation. We should not find offenders idle. I know we've said it over and over again, but idleness, as they say, is the devil's workshop. That's true. Offenders standing around, it's just cause for concern and more trouble. So if we can keep people occupied productively and aiding them to become constructive citizens, I think then we're getting there. So for now,
thank you very much.
Oh, sorry, one main thing. And I know we've written a letter to you about this, and that is the oversight issue. I think that's also critical. We've talked about the independent oversight, and we know there's challenges with it. But I think it shouldn't be a threat to, it's not a threat to the department per se. I think increasing independent oversight will support and help all of us get to a better correctional services department. And right now, there is some challenges. The fact that the DICS's budget is still within the DCS, the fact that the DICS has an email address that is DCS, we've, as a society, we've engaged with the issues over and over again. And on the ground, why officials and inmates don't trust the name, not trust as in, how can I say, we need something more independent. And I think right now we're supposed to have a two-day workshop, and I know it probably is still coming. But just to stress that it's important for all of us that we set an independent monitoring mechanism and put our heads together as to how we can get one that works well for South Africa. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. CSP, and let's just remind you again, I don't know when you came in, 34% of the budget goes to security, 26% to admin, that's about 60%, and 40% shared between the rest. Commissioner is saying that international benchmarks actually point to security being part of the key. And the fact that we are a labor-intensive department, it means that the admin, or at least personnel costs, we can't avoid the fact that we need to be high personnel costs, and that the rest of the 40%, if you take away maybe a little bit for infrastructure, more about productive output on rehabilitation rather than more money. What are you saying about that?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Claire Ballard. I'm a researcher at the Community Law Centre. We prepared some submissions, which I think just speak to exactly your question. I hope you can be distributed, because I think they're quite helpful and tabulate the nature of budget for spending, which I think are in what I think are a very helpful way. On the security issue, in essence, we would agree with Commissioner. The Constitution and the Correctional Services Act, in fact, make it very clear that safe custody is a first priority. We can't even think of rehabilitation until we address the problem of violence, sexual violence, aggressive violence, and so on. So certainly that is an important aspect of any form of care. That's not the end of the issue, though. I think when you look at the nature of waste expenditure, costs associated with litigation, I think there are a number of things that we can address, but not only with correctional services. So, for example, if we reduced the remand detention population by 20%, the state would save 1 billion rand per annum. That's a lot of money. But, of course, it's not a responsibility that lies primarily with the Department of Correctional Services, and it's quite obviously a classic problem, and hopefully the workshops can seek to address how we can work with the Department about this. Sentencing reform is another one. This is something we've been on about again for a long time. We're keeping prisoners, over the years we've been keeping more and more prisoners for longer and longer and longer periods of time. For the most part, we think this is unnecessary. Comparative research would probably agree with that assertion, as does the judiciary. Feel hamstrung by essentially big punitive legislation, and if we put that on the reform agenda, that I think would certainly address the situation associated with poor rehabilitation. It is. In building the community, the commissioner addressed this as well. Bringing the problem to the communities, involving victims, and so on. Absolutely. And I think it's important to mention that we have worked quite extensively with the city on providing various offender rehab programs within the City Works department. It hasn't come to fruition yet, but certainly we did a lot of research on the issue. There's a paper on it, and local governments, I think, should get involved with we would assert that it's in fact one of their responsibilities in terms of the legislation. And the last point I want to make is that good policy must be based on research. As noble as the intentions of the white paper are, we need to remind ourselves that we can't come to these conclusions in a vacuum. There's a lot of social science research of how good rehabilitation, or what good rehabilitation measures look like. And I don't see the department using them. They are, they should involve us in those explorations. We'd be more than willing to help. And there is a lot of empirical data out there on how these outcomes can be achieved. And rehabilitation, in essence, should be outcome-based. And unfortunately, the strategic plans and annual reports don't reflect that. And I think that is where I'm going to stop. But thank you very much.
Thank you, AG. Judicial Inspector, you all have 5 minutes if you want to. Then we open up to members to wrap up the first part of it, then we can have a discussion afterwards. Judicial Inspector, Jenny?
Yes,
I'm sorry, Commissioner, if I'm ambushing you, but I think we should have everybody speaking. Anything, 5 minutes if you want to speak.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Apologies, Gaji's on his way, but maybe I just mention the question of oversight. There is a debate, and I think it's a valuable debate, which will find some kind of clarity when we have this workshop with regard to 1, 2, 6 of independence. The status quo at the moment is that we form part of a program of the Department of Correctional Services. In the last 2 weeks, the inspecting judge and the CEO had met with the Department of Correctional Services, with, I believe, the National Commissioner, the acting CFO, with regard to filling or creating some posts which the minister had approved some time ago. We're still in discussion with the department. The department's view seems to be at that stage, and the judge will ratify this, that the posts that have been signed off by the ministry more than a year and a half ago cannot be funded for this period and in the next financial year. Now, it's not just a question of funding posts. It's about the process that we have engaged in with regard to determining our structure, a more inquisitorial approach, and following some of the cues the portfolio committee had given us with regard to deepening the level of our oversight. Of course, the measure of oversight is reflected in the quarterly report we submit, which are public documents, which will give you a sense of where the inspector had moved and where we were with in history, focus on overcrowding, and incrementally increase our oversight role. The point I'd like to make, the crisp point I'd like to make, is that at this juncture, even before we start debating feasibility or not of an entity which is independent of the department, is that we are advertised by the department determining what our budget is, what it's being increased by, and whether posts that we had asked for and had been on the table for about a year and a half or 2 years will be funded. That, in my own mind and my own view at this stage, is that ties the hand of oversight when the department has, I don't want to use the word hold, but when the department has that authority and power over an oversight body like ours. I don't want to call it a crisis, but internally we've discussed it. The bottom line, as I conclude, is that if the department can't see us halfway, and of course there are problems with regard to the filling of posts and treasury allocations within the department itself, that situation doesn't arise in the inspectorate. But we seem to be tied umbilically to the department's frugality, the department's taking into account the fact that they need to get their spending in line with what Treasury has determined. So I want to leave that point. It's something for further debate in the absence of the inspecting judge and CEO. I think I'll leave it there, but I think it's a very, very critical point. In the last 2 weeks, as I said, the inspecting judge and the CEO have sat with the commissioner and his team, and it's still in the phase of being negotiated. But the consequence of the department saying no more money for you, Chicks, your budget was 31 million rand the previous financial year, it is now 31 million rand for the future, for the next financial year. We can look at it again sometime in September, creates a potential crisis for the inspectorate and its oversight role. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. From us as the auditors, we look at the financial statement, we look at the presentation thereof, we look at the compliance with the framework that is applicable. We also look at the performance information, the so-called predetermined objectives, to make sure that the information that is disclosed in is reliable and is also useful and also compliant with the framework set by the National Treasury, complies with the smart principle, the information has to be simple, it which has to be measurable, which has to be achievable, the objective, and it has to be relevant and time-bound. So it is important that once the department has set those objectives, which may be many in some cases, that they do comply with the guidelines set by the National Treasury and that it will audit. We also audit the compliance with laws and regulations and also the policies that the department has set for itself. So one does not have much to say about the policy formulation. Once the policy is made, we have to audit to see that it is being complied with. So we think this discussion is very useful one in looking at the white paper and also in looking at all the policies that have been formulated to comply with the objectives that the department was set for. But ours is mainly to see that once those have been put in place, that they are complied with and that the report
Thank you, AG. We opened up to members. Just to remind members, we're really talking about the budget direction as opposed to the effective utilization. We'll have that discussion another day, whether they are using it properly. But do we think that the budget direction is correct in terms of the department achieving its stated goals? AG, number or something else in that, that maybe we must discuss. Because if the yardsticks that you are using, AG, are not achievable, I think something in the white paper is not achievable, but it's there, and you measure against that, it means these guys will forever have a qualification of sorts. Because when you measure it, you can say, this is your policy, you've not achieved it. Nobody's asking the question, is that policy achievable today? So I'm saying, that is something that we need to look at all of us, because we committed to this department having clean water sometime in our lifetime. But if the policy that the OEG is measuring is not achievable, it means you failed even before you started as DDS. So those are the things that we should be looking at. But let's open it up for general discussion. I note Mr. South and Mam Gwenya, and if others want to, we shall follow up. But now it's open for everybody because you've had an opportunity. But let's take Mr. South and then Mam Gwenya.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think it is true, the point that you made about the white paper being a 20-year document. You must also understand that we're halfway through that 10 years now. And I think it's very important to reflect at some point on picking up on the point that you made about the some of the goals maybe being unrealistic, to do a 10-year review on the white paper to see where we are with the white paper implementation. But you know, the white paper sort of posed an existential question about the place of prisons in our society. And, it had some things to say. Now, I mean, from where I come from, it's clear that you need a place where you lock up sociopaths and violent people and antisocial people, and that you correct their behavior. And it's clear that as part of that, you need to send out a message to society that crime is unacceptable. And I hear what people say about minimum sentences and mandatory sentences, but you know, if you think about Aneen Voisin, for example, you can't just say, well, you know, that's just one of those things that happens. I mean, you've got to send out a message when a crime like that happens, because society demands it. But at the same time, I think it's absolutely true that by and large, if you send somebody to prison in South Africa at the moment, that person will, by and large, emerge more criminalized on release than when they were admitted to the facility. And there are a number of factors, and we talked about them often, the values of the staff, the culture of the department, the gangs in prison, overcrowding, the role of mandatory sentences, the fondness of the judiciary to impose sentences of imprisonment in the first instance. And all those things make it very, very difficult, I think, to rehabilitate offenders. You know, just because the volume's so high and the staff aren't, you know, they're not enough staff to do what needs to be done. So really, I think when we do this 10-year review, maybe, of the white paper, we need to reflect on how can we break that in a very real sense. And in that quest, how can you migrate diverting more people out of the criminal justice system, and how can you migrate towards more community correction centers? And I think there are a number of things need to
take place, obviously you have to build the confidence in both the public and the judiciary that such sentences are both rehabilitative and that the people that are sentenced to such sentences don't abscond. I think the department's taken some very important steps. I'm very delighted about the tracking devices. I think it needs to be rolled out on a much, much bigger scale, assuming that they are effective. I think there's been a lot of community education about particularly the advantages of reintegrating offenders. I think there's been some important work done on restorative justice, but I think we could do much more imaginative work there, and particularly around the role of actually physically paying back a debt to somebody that you have taken something away from. Now, the questions about the budget come down to this. I mean, is ComCorp particularly capacitated, if we were to take this new direction, change direction, is ComCorp capacitated to do it? Do they have enough staff? Do they have enough equipment? Community corrections? Are there enough opportunities for community service to come to care made? And are there opportunities around the country, or are they just concentrated in certain places? So I think that would be a discussion that I would be very interested in. But the other big area that the Commission pointed out was all around remand detainees. And I know it's complicated because it's a custom issue, but it is true that the quicker we get people out of remand detention, the more money we save and the more money we can put into other aspects of our activities. And it was for that reason that we did establish the new branch. I'd be very interested to see or to hear how far we are down the road to implementing what we created in the 2011 legislation. But I also think that there's a role, and the Commissioner talked about building facilities, of building dedicated remand facilities so that you can put a court on the premises, that you can start consolidating all the cases in one arraignment so that you're not appearing in the Mitchell Plain Court and then in the Cape Town Court and then in the Bellville Court, where you can have opportunities for escape and all the other things that go with it. And I just wonder whether we couldn't be a little bit more imaginative there as well to see whether we can both secure a quicker rate of processing and remand detainees, as well as lowering the risk of their escape. Thank you, Chair.
Baba, welcome. We did get the report that you are joining us later, so you are more than welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Mongoya.
Yes, Professor. And thank you for the discussion here. And Mr. Chapter CBC, and we like to thank all the members that have been attending, and also the department also was present, Commissioner, was having a good support from correctional service. And I'm sure Wapsele, the way you were strong on that thing, I can see you managed to come to work to show that you are strong, that service has made you strong. Clean up week.
I think that I will start with my social reintegration, which is in my heart. And because I believe this committee wanted to see change in terms of the inmate that has been rehabilitated in our center. And Chair, I'm still see this program. Is a program that always chairperson is not getting a budget that is going to assist the inmate. Even in terms of their release. I'm happy because a commissioner has passed that on the correctional forum that we need to get budget to do those work. But on the budget that is always allocated for this program, I don't think that we're going to make it effective. So I would like us, when we deal about this, and check that how best can we get a budget that is going to work this program to be a priority. Jefferson, I think we agree about facilities, but the problem that I have there is the slow progress of poor working relationship with the DPW. That one, Jefferson, is still a question to me, because it's the one that caused the understanding of this program in terms of the facilities. Three, Chair, I wanted to talk about the staff of correctional service in terms of the payment of them. We always take this thing easy, Chair. But when we go to offsite, we call the staff, because we don't want to be seen as a member that is only focusing on inmates but not focusing on their food soldiers. The challenge of our staff, national commissioner, is the way they earn. Two is the promotion, Chairperson. I don't know whether it's going according to ranks or whatever, but it needs to be look at a proper chain. How best can we put more budget for our staff so that they can do their work effectively? Maybe Commissioner, even the Franklin is out there. Because this nowadays is not like the past, whereby people that were arrested, it was a politician. But now we've got big criminals that got money, and they can take our staff with that money because we're not paying them enough as supposed to. And this overtime check, I would like us not let us not ignore it, because I believe that the overtime has stopped. Because it was said there's a lot of money that it is spending on this overtime. But when we cut this overtime and go to this 7 days establishment, we never check the salary of them. Now they like this overtime capacity because it's increasing their money. So, Chair, we don't want to look like a union. But we're saying this because we want them to do their work effectively. Mother Zuselens Wabo, Onzima, Overstressayo, Odinga Nabo, Wabo, putting us on discussing them, go to social workers and get Seeing that also, they must be healed, because they're working with people who gave them threats. So it looks like you are not looking at that. And the budget of them is showing that you are not looking at that. Prayer 4. Okay. That has been the problem of community correctional forum. Also, Chapter 2, maybe it falls under this social integration. But also, Chapter 2, that program doesn't have results. Maybe that's why we're not doing it effectively, because there's no resource to do that. We find that the correctional community forum, they short cuts, they short of facilities. We're still in Joburg, whereby they will chase away some of the buildings, working outside because the inmates have got eight. That it must go and sign, and they can't say we're not going to work because we don't have an office. They put the table outside. protection that inmate when complaints that inmate will be able to have. So the issue of facility capacity is very, very important. Therefore, also we need to put a budget on it. In terms of care capacity, let us not look down the foot of the inmate. It is part of care in terms of the act of people here. So let us not say no, then they can eat whatever they can eat. So we need to take care in terms of food and make sure that the budget is there. Lastly, I agree with you that the department must do a program, a 5-year priority program, because we believe that there's a lot of things that is needed, but it is very important for them to prioritize their program in terms of the budget. Thank you.
Any other takers or members? No? All right. We'll open up a second round if we so wish, but in terms of what is beginning to come out, there's a clear proposal that maybe the time is right for a 10-year review of the white paper. Maybe the time is right, and people must talk about that. What does that really mean? If Mr. Dow says there must be a review, what does it mean? Does it mean, Commissioner, you must commission a expert to go and look at it and come back to all of us with proposal? What does a 10-year review mean? I think it's appropriate that we do that so that the incoming parliament, whoever they are among Kenya, don't work like us in the DAO in terms of whatever. At least they have something that says it's achievable, it's affordable, it's all those things. So the first proposal from the staff around the 10-year review, and hopefully that review would be able to say in the first 3 months this is what we must achieve, in the first 5 years, in the first whatever, this is what we must achieve. There's nobody that seems to be saying that the direction is not correct. Everybody is saying security is a must, rehabilitation, care, all those things are a must. It's just about how we express the outcomes, the tangible outcomes. And Commissioner, you're saying to us that when we see your next stress band, it's not going to be wishy-washy. It's going to be specifically going to be whatever. So hopefully that then addresses some of our concerns that we have raised. Those are the type of things we allow everybody. We all seem to be on the same page. I think it's just about where to from now. The most immediate one is you're going to come to us with your threat plan, you're going to come to us with your, annual performance, whatever, you're going to come with those things to us. We're going to sit at a committee and we have to decide on the budget Mamgwenya, what do we do there? Because really, we should be now preparing for that. We don't want to get to a situation where we're fighting with you and we've had this type of a discussion. It's about fine-tuning it when we get there. So that is the immediate, the short term, and we must agree as a committee. That's what I'm saying in the second round. There's a proposal that there must be a 10-year review. Let's agree or disagree with it here. And if we agree, who do we task with doing the stage work for that? And then, of course, we are talking here about you need to improve. Or we're emphasizing the fact that what you're doing, you must do better. Facilities, the shortcomings around facilities, the cooperation with DPW and all those types of things. So let's open up for a second round. But if you can speak to those type of things. And of course the debate, Mr. Rajan, around the future of a independent oversight has not disappeared. We will have that discussion. We will have the discussion at some point. Is this in its current form effective, does it need tweaking and so on. So that we will have. Right now we're really talking about, does this budget help us achieve what we want to achieve, and if it does, Oh, if it doesn't, what do we do about it? Let's open up. Commissioner Soda, what so you want to comment? Anybody else want to comment thereafter? It's going to be the last round. You follow Matt. And okay, that seems to be it. And then we'll allow members, if they want to, then we'll wrap it up by way of summary so that we can merge it accordingly and follow up. Bob.
Thanks, Chair. In fact, I was going to say my colleagues will respond where appropriate. Certainly, this has been a very welcomed approach, Chairperson. It gives us the confidence and the morale booster that we're not working in darkness, but working together with the committee and stakeholders. Sincerely appreciate it, because we're starting to look at the things in the same prism, at the same time trying to delineate LFS. We might not be seeing blind spots, so to say. I must say that on the funding of NGOs, a different story, we'll look into that, whether our budget is there for that. I'm just flagging this. And the issues of oversight that you have applied, Chair. The issue that I just want us to look into is the gang issues, not for discussion, but also to gloss over. I just want us to understand that the proliferation of gangs has moved from the old days to the current situation. So the gangs that we saw in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 70s are no longer the same gangs. And therefore, the gang issues have now permeated into our society. When people come to our facilities, you know, they don't just become gang members. You know, they come to our facilities already being gang members. So I just want us to understand that it's now becoming a different matter altogether. The world game has changed. The parameters have changed. So the gang issues, as they are, it's something that we need to pay attention to. So there is no panacea. And correctional services, as an organization, is not going to be able to provide what you call a definite response to this. Just a case in point, some months back, there was a request in the Western Cape that the Minister of Police should bring police to deal with the gangs in one particular township or whatever it is. Those members of the gangs find themselves in our facility. So you're dealing with multi-pronged strategy. That should be overarching at national level, because the gangs all have their own strategy. So I would love to flag with that. Remuneration, community corrections, and the like. But Chair, I just want to appreciate one common denominator here, that for this card sitting here, I think the team that we lead will leave with a very strong mandate that says it is about time that we look as to how things are. And secondly, I just want to appreciate the comment made by Mr. South saying that one important element has in its small minuscule contribution to electronic monitoring, that it should be also be appreciated by the judiciary, that can give confidence that all those who are in our care who have been given this particular attention by electronic, we can account for them. I can put on record we can account for each and every life. I'm not talking about those who are on electronic monitoring are like us. We account for them. And certainly, it gives us, it boosts our morale that a recognition is given to the department that something that we have put forward is starting to show fruits. And it will deal with the issues of restorative justice, alternative sentences, and non-custodial. On that note, Chair, just one word of appreciation, and certainly we'll work towards a common approach with everybody here. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members. I think in the same breath, I want to appreciate the positive discussion that we are having. I just wanted to refer again to the white paper on page 75, where it defines the responsibility of the Department of Correctional Services. And the last paragraph 4.1.2, where it says the responsibility of the Department of Correctional Services is first and foremost to correct the offending behavior in a secure, safe, and humane environment in order to facilitate the achievement of rehabilitation and avoidance of recidivism. Now, the issue of security is central to stability. There can be no stability without proper security in place. And Chairperson, in reviewing this, my suggestion would be that as we look at the budget of security, we try and unpack it and say what exactly does it entail, because it's only then that we can identify areas that might not be deemed as necessary and can be, maybe that money can be returned elsewhere. But I think if we're just looking at it as 34%, we might be missing 8 points somewhere, because if we acknowledge that security is central to stability, as we say in page 74, we then have to unpack it. What does it mean? What does the security mean? And I hear from the inputs that came from members and even from non-governmental organizations that there is no disagreement in terms of the importance of security. But the issue is how do we move in ensuring that our budget is aligned to the white paper. Much as we would welcome the issue of the 10-year review, but then if we say 10 years, that review would be in 2015. This is a 2005 white paper. Its 10-year review is in 2015. We might want to look at the 5-year review, though, and say, given the past 5, 6, 7 years, how far are we moving towards the implementation of the white paper? Taking into cognizance, Chairperson, that some of these discussions might also, I submit, require us to engage beyond correctional services, maybe recommending even at committee level that engagements within the cluster from the side of committees to look at some of these issues, because as Honourable Member rightfully said, we spend a lot of money keeping people in remand detention, only to find them gone the next day. They are not even sentenced, or they are fined money that they can afford and pay and go away. Now, the length of stay at remand detention has to be looked into. Unfortunately, it's not what we can say. Minister was making an example one day, referring to correctional services, saying the school principal can say it's full, and that's it. We can say it's full. If people are striking in Sasolbeck and they are arrested, we can't say Sasolbeck is small. We have to take them. So the length and the reasons why people are kept in remand detention need to be debated within the cluster. And we agree with a solution that is workable for government, a solution that will ensure that some of the resources that we spend in keeping people there are rechanneled and redirected elsewhere to the priorities of correctional services. The issue of sentencing, reforming sentencing, is an issue that as correctional services we are also forever hammering within our own cluster. That's why I'm saying maybe if the interaction also happens at committee level to relook at the issue of sentencing. You hear now magistrates and judges and everybody else criticizing the parole system, the number of people that we take out on parole, and some even making remarks that they will write in their remarks to make it impossible for correctional people to release people. That would mean that you have no option but to keep these people inside. So we have to look at those issues also, which had a bearing on the budget of correctional services. Yes, we have a handful of people that went out, a certain percentage of special remission was in 2% of people who offended. But now, when it's being spoken about, it's a blanket as if everybody was granted special remission by the president and re-offended. What then are the solutions for DCS? So the solutions for DCS do not only lie within DCS, they lie also in the interpretation of our own policy, interpretation of the parole system, the fact that one victim feel that a person must not be released on parole. Does it mean that we should keep that person? And of course, that we know how much is the cost, irrespective, because one victim feels that I'm not happy, this person must be kept. So my proposal is that as we engage, let's also engage beyond correctional services. And yes, we can welcome the review. We might say we are looking at a 5-year review or even less than 10 years, and say let's look at the review and see, and have a plan to say going forward, this is how we see the alignment of the budget towards the priorities of DPS. And maybe if I can reflect on the staff issues that were raised by the honorable member. We had an engagement between Minister and Labour and Hassel Management, where all the issues that the honorable member has mentioned were put on the table, the issue of staffing, the issue of overtime payments, the 7-day establishment in its entirety, all those challenges. We have established the task team between Labour and DCS to look into those issues and see how collectively we can come up with solutions and try to address those issues. And I believe that once that report is available, Commissioner, it's a report that would be a public report to say this is how far we've gone in trying to address some of those issues. But the issue of security, when you look at it and you go to the ground level, you would still get concerns about the security. Some of the incidents that we have also give us a wake-up call without discussing the incident to say the issue of security also has to be looked into by the department. So my plea would be that as we look at the alignment, let's look at exactly where does this money go? Is it important? Is it not important? Can it shift? If it shifts, what are the implications of doing so? And I believe that we can be able to come to a common ground and agree on certain issues. Thanks, Chair.
Yes,
thank you. I just wanted to react to some of the issues raised in relation to remand detention. I see the issue of overcrowding, how it impacts on rehabilitation. Clear has made a comment about reducing the number of remand detainees by 20%. And in relation to that, I think it's very important what the VOO has said in terms of working within the cluster, because we're looking at 15-20% of our remand detainees have bail within our system. And for me, that is certainly a group that we must look at quite urgently to say, if there has been a decision by a judicial officer to say this person has been granted bail, meaning there has been an investigation into whether they will in fact appear again in court, that this is a group of people that shouldn't remain with us, which should clearly deal with the issue of reducing by about 20%. I just also wanted to mention on the implementation of the Correctional Matters Amendment Act, we have two sections outstanding on that act, one is 49G. The other one, 48 is the one dealing with uniform, which will take a bit more time. But 49G, we are looking at implementing in the second quarter of this next financial year. The issue of a sort of separate remand detention facility, which the Commissioner Benson and his staff also referred to some extent that is being done through audiovisual remand system, where we do have people that aren't traveling to court to cut down on issues relating to security and can appear in court within our facility through the audiovisual remand. And that again is an issue that we must discuss within the cluster in terms of its effectiveness and need for rollout. Those are just some of the questions I want to address. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Vanessa?
Just quickly, to just pick up the issue of, I think the sentencing reform issue is a very important one. And one thing I forgot to mention, we mentioned it last year, is those that are serving under 2 years in our correctional facilities, I think we know that the less people we have in prison, the more cost-effective it's going to be. And Mr. Starr talked about community corrections and the conversion of sentences. I mean, if that's a feasible thing that we could explore, because there is quite a number of people who are being sentenced under 2 years, and then we must address the issue. And remember, they're not getting sentencing plans, whatever. So, I mean, it's a broader issue within the cluster, but it's something we have to look at.
Thank you, Chief. Good morning to all the members of the Portfolio Committee and other representatives. Chair, I'm not going to respond, but maybe just to add to the think tank as you requested, Madam, to me, just share some ideas. I think, firstly, you know, responsible for rehabilitation in correctional services, I really appreciate the comment. report that all of them are very positive, and this has been up to the department to make sure that, you know, we are in the right direction and we do have the support. So in terms of the issue of partnership, I think we need also to be reminded that the white paper is also providing direction, and also, you know, chapter 13 as well as other chapters indicating that we need to partner with NGOs or communities. And also, you know, from chapter 3 referring to the correction of the societal responsibility. Here we do have comprehensive policies as well as manuals in terms of the relationship. And we do have the quality control and quality assurance committees on three different levels, just to make sure that we are all in the same direction. Here, I also just want to touch on the matter of the funding. As a department, we have for quite some time looking into this matter. And we have extensive discussions with DSG as well as other government departments. But maybe I don't know whether Nico and the colleagues are aware of the court, High Court ruling in Bloemfontein some time ago, where they nullified the models of DSG, because we were very behind on the models and the approach of DSG, because we were referred to them by other government departments. And the court nullified and instructed that DSG must go back to the court with the model. And our latest information is that that happened on two occasions and still being referred back. So in other words, we don't have a real model currently that, you know, we can say this is the best practice that we can use. And that is one of the issues. I don't want to comment and say if it was not for that, if they were there, but we need to take cognizance of what is happening with the department who is having this relationship with NGOs. So just to mention that here. Here the other matter that I think also important to raise while the stakeholders are also here is the fact of what we see in the budget operational services. You know, sometimes if you look at a budget, you'll find that you look at the heart. But the brain who is making sure that the blood is running all parts of the body, not just the nose. What I mean by that is to say that in terms of when white paper was drafted, Chair and those who were briefed by then will recall that the fact that we are struggling as a country with psychologists, social workers, and professionals, there was a deliberate decision to use correctional officials to present correctional programs to address offending behavior. In other words, if you look from a distance to the budget, you don't see that, because those custodial officials are not under the program rehabilitation. In other words, the majority of those programs, and about 40 to 15% of the correction of the programs addressing offending behavior is being done by NGOs where we do have facilities. In other words, you don't see that in monetary terms. So it doesn't mean that it's only the amount that is visible that are going to address offending behavior as well as then the issue of rehabilitation and skills transfer. Here we do have, for example, also, you know, in terms of education, it's not only those few teachers that we do have. We have current 150 volunteers who are coming to do certain stuff. So you don't see that in the budget. But if we are not mentioning it, it seems that, you know, the department is really not taking this seriously. So, you know, we have other departments who are involved. Department of Communication funded a couple of millions for training of offenders. You don't see that in the budget. The National Skills Fund, you know, another 63 million where more than 5,000 offenders are trained. That is not visible if you just look on a distance at the budget. So, Chair, you know, the President Awards programs where Nico and all of us are involved. Now, you don't see that also. So it's just a few examples just to say that we really appreciate the input, but, you know, there are more inputs to rehabilitation and addressing offending behavior, as what you can see. Here's the issue that maybe just not to respond, but just as a comment that Vanessa raised in terms of those doing 2 years and less. It's roughly on a given day 10,000 in the department, and as we release them, they are coming in. But also just to mention that in relationship with the department at the University of Victoria, they are doing a research in terms of those who short-term, so that we can have also a reliable reference in terms of, you know, what is causing that. So just as a short input from the thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, ma'am.
Thanks, Chair. Two quick points. The first is the sentence plan. Those who are sentenced to less than 24 months tend not to receive the sentence plan, which would necessarily involve things like rehabilitation and skills training. I'm not sure that the judiciary is sufficiently aware of this, and I think that they intend to do the offender a service by reducing the sentence to one that is less than 24 months, which unfortunately might be to the detriment of not receiving the care that they then require as an offender, and I think that's something that needs to be flagged and raised at the club level. The other is the issue of community corrections. While the electronic monitoring is certainly a very valuable aspect and has been valuable in relation to remand detention and overcrowding, it only performs a policing function. It doesn't replace any meaningful contact between the community corrections and any type of rehabilitative service that parole necessarily envisages. And I think that needs to be understood as well. While it certainly performs valuable service, to save time, money in the long run, it's not the end of the issue for community corrections. And importantly, for the most part, I think community corrections is, for the most part, focused on that policing function. And they, at the least, very least, could function as a broker between the offender and the available rehabilitative services within the community, which I don't think they do to the extent that they could.
All right. I'll allow you, Commissioner, but I saw many eyebrows being raised when that was the issue. So I'm worried as well to start a discussion. You're right, ma'am, it might be a policing, but it will assist if we are able to police that Vincent goes to NICRA offices every day, or Vincent goes to those offices every day. So, yeah, we shouldn't rubbish it or take away what you're saying, but what we're saying is we should better utilize the technology. I really want to open it up, but Commissioner, Vanessa, I see you want to say something. We really want to close after that. Any members want to say anything? I'm not going to allow another round. I know the Commissioner. Let's take Vanessa first, and Commissioner, you'll follow in case you want to respond.
Just on the issue of the community corrections, I hear what you're saying. We shouldn't be only supervising and monitoring. And if that's all the capacity we have, then we should look at it. But as we say in the DCS, the vision is rehabilitation. So community corrections have to be reformed, changed to become more rehabilitative. And I know these efforts that are being made, but more effort needs to. And to what Ms. Smallberg said, in order to release under 24 months and why they come back, unless we boost up the community on-call system, we can continually get it back because reintegration is not working. But then that also depends on rehabilitation in prison.
I think you're still on the same page. I was very interested.
We're still all on the same page. Chair, no, I'm not going to open a debate now to... Just to emphasize that the question was raised whether community corrections fully resolved. That was the question that Vanessa itself. And perhaps we did not respond to it appropriately. Yes, I did indicate in my opening remarks that we have three dedicated units, the core business of the department, incarceration and corrections, community corrections and remand detention. Indeed, with these new branches that are dedicated specifically for these activities, there is a need from our side to have properly resourced units, and therefore the issue of resourcing is key. And therefore it is important that whilst with the community corrections, which is the largest of number of people inside the community, outside in the community, that this issue is dealt with accordingly. And indeed, Vanessa, the issue of electronic monitoring is one part of the so many facets of things that we need to do. And it also helps us right in saying that the program will continue and it will be staffed appropriately, and of course, the budget and the resources allocated in a manner that it deals with the issues of rehabilitation, at the same time, proper reintegration. What we need to discuss here also, perhaps consider, is that much of our work entails having people outside the community. There's an issue of post-incarceration, which we have not even begun to deal with. Post-incarceration and post-care, that's the issue that the community of survivors should deal with. Because these people have reintegrated into the society, but they have no jobs. And therefore, the door of recidivism starts opening bigger and bigger. We can do all these nice things, but if we don't have a program post-incarceration and society accepts that these people are bad, but they cannot be reintegrated in the mainstream of the economy, we have a problem. So I think we need also to be thinking beyond the blue sky and saying we have done all this work. Private and public institutions should start looking at skills that these people have. What's the use of being a workshop, producing the best furniture? When you come out, even if you have a workshop, a small company, nobody wants to take care of you. So the easiest way route back is to go back to a prison. So we need to be starting to say, let's applaud the work that is being done, both by the community corrections, by the committees themselves and ourselves, but we need to be having concrete programs of reintegration per se. Now, those are the issues that we need to be delving in. I think, just to share with you, with the Department of Education, the CDC INCO, Mr. Smallberger, and the team, we're met with the Department of Education. We shall build schools. We shall add value. We shall upgrade their skills. But it is important that after they have completed their sentences, that the skills that they have acquired in our facilities are taken further to a higher level of trajectory that we envisage. That we can have small projects that the community can accept that these people have skills that they have acquired in our facility. So there's no contradiction, but it is important that there is a further continuation of what we have done in our facilities, into the community, and then the sustainability of the project. Thanks, John.
Well, this is a naturopathic job.
Well, the question perhaps is rhetoric. It's the society as a whole. It's not correctional services. Because we have done what is expected of us, but we are not saying thank you. We are saying we are concerned. We don't want to hear this individual. I remember when the minister, Matsang Magula, was saying to those who were released on remission, I don't want to see you back. But what guarantees does she have? She's saying you have done well, you have conducted yourself in the best of the model. But the committee, let's suppose hypothetical accepts. How long is this goodwill going to be sustainable? Therefore, I'm saying both private and public sector must play their role, wherein we must give them opportunities. That is what is called posting. Now, I remember at one point there was an article that says correctional services has employed a former convict. Very wrong statement. What a pitiful statement. And this man has studied in our facility. With a master's degree, studying to it was his doctorate, and we have employed him. But little did they ask us whether his crime is expunged. It's neither here nor there. The usability of this person into the society is something that we need to be looking at. We should not be a society that is retributive, but appreciates work that has been done. Now we've been saying in the newspaper, young man in Durban, Westville, 5 distinctions. For the moment, he's still a good man. Completes his studies, nobody wants to take it. Or if it's taken, they've employed a convict. The stigma in our society is something that we need to deal with. Also from electronic, in the manner in which we communicate with our society. But a society that is always stepping itself to a point where we don't see the good value that we do as a collective. I think that answers all of us are responsible.
All right. To summarize, and now members of parliament must oppose if they want to oppose, because I think we want to move forward. The first proposal of Mr. Shah, the 10-year review, I think we're agreeing that it's not going to be 10 years, was just the number, but in practical terms it's 8 years. The principle that we'd want is that in our handover report to whoever is in this position post-2014, they must at least have something that says we've reviewed 2005 to 2013, which is 8 years, and this is what we picked up. More importantly, the next 5 years, from 14 to 19, these are the achievable, these are the affordable, and these are the measurable steps that we suggest should be taken. So that at least that will then help us in terms of putting it in phases for starters, and not only the first 20 years, but secondly, that there is focus for whoever comes in. Really, it's achievable. Everybody's been talking about the outputs must be meaningful and tangible, so it's measurable, and is it affordable, because everybody's talking about the budget. If we can do that, and that's why I said members must must then raise it. I'm proposing, Commissioner, that somehow or the other, because you guys have more resources than we have, that between yourselves and somebody, the NGO, just put through a basic discussion document for us. That is, this is what we think, this is how far we've come, this is where we think the next 5 years should be, to be tabled here for all of us to open up a discussion on. Is that acceptable to MP? Okay. Tatai? Because we really want to, for us, we want to have that as our handover report to the next incoming guy. And it doesn't have to be detailed, but I mean, just something that we can start discussing. Can we leave that to you guys? Then you can come back to us. That's the first one. The second one is, Jolene Anna, I think, personally, I agree with you, that we should call a committee cluster meeting to be briefed on the criminal justice. We always hear about the criminal justice system review. Whenever we talk about it, Mr. Andre said, no, but that thing takes care of it or so and so. So my proposal is that we should be the lead committee that asks at least justice and theft and ourselves to be briefed by officials on what this criminal justice review really is and does it take care of our stuff as correctional services. You on that foot?
Yes, I think it's a brilliant idea. We have tried in the past to regulate this, and the scheduling has been prevented. The problems around getting people to be in the same place at the same time. If we go that route, I have two suggestions. Firstly, we should probably put aside a full day, if not more than a full day. Probably take it off campus because people get distracted here. And thirdly, that we bring in the invite what Mr. Smallberg is also social development if they can be presenting that in their role.
All right. So between Cindy and her team and ourselves, we'll try and facilitate the meeting with social development, staff, justice, and ourselves to be briefed by officials on what this thing called criminal justice system review means, because it might be being reviewed, but it's not catering for us as correctional services, or it's not catering closely for us where we can influence it. So we will try and put that together. As difficult as it is, we'll try and put it together. So yeah, so I think it doesn't take away our primary role of oversight. We'll continue to do the oversight on quarterly, financial, and operation, and of course where current affairs dictate, we will go through that oversight. There's a crisis in Vishu or whatever. So, but these are the type of things that we think, instead of us being a committee that meets for meeting's sake, we really want to be focused. It helps you guys that we don't bring you here every week. It helps us that we are more focused, and it gives us something tangible. So we will try and formulate our program along those grounds. Is that right with members? And then finally, of course, in terms of this engagement, it assists us even in formulating our own budget debate, because we all, I want to repeat, are on the same page in terms of the broad thrust. We'll fight about whether the oversight was correct, but on the broad thrust, we are on the same page, and we think we should be sending signals now about the usefulness of technology, the fact that we want to rehabilitate community involvement and all those things. Thank you very much. It was very useful for us. We also will, and I'm looking at Cindy and member, I think the discussion around the effectiveness of the initial commission is not off the table, is it? No. So we certainly will also in our program have a discussion, Baba Shabalar, on the relevance of your organization in its current form. Should we change it? How does it relate to, you'd recall that this podcast is also something that is there about the anti-choice. How do all these things come together? So we will have that discussion at some point and come up with tangible stuff. Thank you very much. As we indicated, next week, Jolinga in the absence of Commissioner, we're discussing finances. Again, can we request that you give us your documentation so that members are able to look at it and have a meaningful engagement AG, of course, as usual, the financials, you are a very key player. So if you are there, it's going to help us. But we will be dealing with the last quarter, I think. The third quarter. Thank you very much. The meeting has adjourned. Thank you so much, members. Tomorrow we do in-house in T226. Some of the minutes and so on.
I think you're going to be given a